Now, going on from this imprisoning of the consciousness into what I call the eggshell goes something else very important. But this is the structure that has allowed this control by the few of the many to go on throughout this period I'm talking about. Because if you're going to hold people in that eggshell of perception and thought and possibility, you have to keep from them vast amounts of information that would set them free. Set them free to understand that the world is being controlled in the first place, and also set them free from their own sense of limitation. So throughout this period of time, the same structure can be seen, and it can be symbolized, as you see here, by a pyramid. You've got a tiny, tiny few people at the top of the pyramid who hoard the really advanced knowledge, the knowledge that would set us free if we had access to it. And the rest of the pyramid is fiercely compartmentalized. So the further you come down into the mass of the people, the less that knowledge is in circulation, until you reach the point where it's hardly in circulation at all. And this structure of knowledge in the hands of the few and the masses kept in ignorance is one that goes on again and again and again. And without it, frankly, this manipulation simply couldn't happen. And the world would not be as it currently is and has been for thousands of years. And the nature of some of this information, years ago, as we'll come to as we tell the chronological story in a second, maps of the world existed, which, for instance, the ancients knew that the American continent was there. The idea that Christopher Columbus was the first European to discover the American continent, I mean, it's just ludicrous. I've just seen a pig fly across here for a start. I mean, it's just crazy on basic evidence. And if you had maps of the world and the mass of the people didn't know they existed, that again gives you a significant knowledge which most people don't have. But now we're in the what you might call the modern world. We're in a situation where fantastic technology exists outside the public arena, which we don't know about. And if we did, it would be a very different world. A little while ago, when I started to get a bit of a profile in this information, I was invited to a meeting with a guy in America who works for the CIA as a scientist, against his will. And he told me of the amazing technology that has not just been available more recently, it's been available for decades. Technology that would create abundant growth in deserts without water, end of famine in Ethiopia and other places in the world. That would give us all the power and warmth we need in our homes, in our businesses, in our factories, without using polluting fossil fuels and these other sources which are doing such damage to the planet. Technology which could cure cancer and so-called incurable diseases exists now. Why don't we have it? Because it would set us free, it would give us choice, and choice equals freedom. Lack of choice equals the opposite of freedom, the imprisoning eggshell that I'm talking about. So it's kept from us. And I asked this guy, just to give you an idea of what's going on the other side of the movie screen that's projected at us via the media and education and what we laughingly call that. I said to him the obvious question, if you don't like doing all this, why do you work for the CIA against your will? And he opened his shirt and he said, this is why. And it was a kind of a bizarre moment because on one area of the room, there was his children and his family. And yet I was looking at this father from this bizarre perspective of the world he lives in when he goes out the door in the morning. On his chest was a see-through sachet, or patch as they call them in the trade. And in it was this golden liquid, which turns out to be a drug. And he went into work one day, because just because you work for the CIA or the FBI doesn't mean you want to control the world and unfold all this stuff I'm going to come to. Most people think they're serving their country. Why? Because they're down here in the pyramid. He went in to work one day, and he has missing time he still can't account for. He remembers just waking up, however, in this room. And when he woke up, he realized this patch was there. And the reason it was there was this. His body had been manipulated to need that drug to survive. And if the drug is not replaced, and the patch has to be replaced every 72 hours, he starts to die. And after one incident, when he said no more, they did that. And this is just one of countless people all over the world who are geniuses in their area that could use that genius to set the world free, who in fact use it because of this situation to further imprison the world and deny us the knowledge of the existence of these technologies, while the very same technologies are used against us to further to increase the control. Because of course, knowledge is neutral. Technology is neutral. It's how you use it that is positive or negative and is either freeing or imprisoning. So I got to the point, particularly in a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free, where I'd in very great detail highlighted the structure of how the world is controlled today. And later on in this two video series, I'll get into that. But then you look at it, and you look at the scale of the structure and the detail of it and the way it works and the way all these different apparently unconnected institutions are actually connected, and you say, well, this could not have been put together in a few weeks, a few years, a few decades. So when did this thing start? And you go back. You go back. I got it comfortably to the time of the Crusades and the period that a lot of so-called knights organizations appeared, around the 1100s, 1200s, that kind of period, and into the 1300s. Very comfortably back then. Keep going back, keep going back. And eventually you're into thousands of years BC before you can pick up the thread of where this thing came from. And then you start to look at some of the great mysteries of the ancient world and ask a few questions, because conventional history says that we are at this time at the cutting edge of human knowledge. There was never any society or civilization in the past, or what we call the past, that was here or in advance of here. And in fact, the ancients were like primitive and didn't know much. Well, who built these then? The pyramids at Giza and some of the other great structures of the ancient world, which are mathematically, geometrically, perfection. Who built them? Bill and Ethel in the tent? I mean, who did it? Then you look at some of the other... This is Easter Island. I'm sure I know someone looks like that. I'm sure I know someone that was designed on. But this is, again, thousands of years ago. And them hats there are apparently 10 tons. Be interesting, wouldn't it? How did they get them up there? You know, you imagine it, can't you? Come on, Bill, bit more, left, right. Was done by high intelligence. No one knows where they came from. All the pyramids. Look at this, this is in Peru. Now, this has been done by an axe and chisel, isn't it? Look at the perfection of the way that stone is fitted into the rest. Can't hardly get a piece of paper between it. Thousands of years ago, this was done by a primitive people. Oh, aye. Places full of pigs flying. Look at the size of this in Peru. You know, again, all right, Bill, bit heavier this time, but to the left. Fantastic knowledge created these things in the ancient world. This stone there in the center is one of three weighing 800 tons, called the Trilithon, in a place called Baalbek, in what we now call the Lebanon. Thousands of years BC, that was built. And those 800-ton blocks had to be moved at least a third of a mile. Primitives did that. I read it somewhere. It must be true. He had letters after his name, the guy that said it. This is the Nazca Lines in Peru again, on the Nazca Plains. There you have a situation where in the ancient world they scored away the top surface to reveal the white underneath. And amazing depictions of birds, insects, and animals were created in this way. And some of them were only discovered in terms of what they were when we rediscovered, and I emphasize the rediscovered out of fly in this century. Because some of these things can only be seen from 1,000 feet, apparently. So there's a bird, and here's a spider, again, the Nazca Lines. How did they do that, this primitive people all over the world? Because they were not primitive. In the sense that there was a group within ancient society that had amazingly advanced knowledge. And that's the knowledge that's been hoarded and passed over to the few into the modern world that is still used to control us and always has been used to control us. And it's amazing. People talk about prophecy. Well, here's a confirmation that prophecy is absolutely fact and not some myth. On an ancient hillside, or not an ancient hillside, but a hillside with an ancient depiction of something on it, in Devon, in England, here's an incredible prophecy of thousands of years later, the arrival on Earth of Bill Clinton. Bill comes into this in many ways. Sorry, my eyes are watering. It's all right. Cameraman's looking a bit pale as well, but Bill Clinton, again, President of the United States, as we'll see, all this stuff about, you know, Monica Lewinsky and all that stuff is absolutely obscuring what Bill Clinton's really involved in and what he's really connected to. Because again, we're watching day after day a smokescreen and an illusion behind which the truth is. So in the ancient world, there were people with fantastic knowledge. Where did that knowledge come from? I put this picture up just to emphasize the nonsense of how the idea that extraterrestrial life doesn't exist, how ridiculous it is. There are billions of stars in this universe. It's apparently estimated, I was reading, a billion in this galaxy. How many galaxies in the universe? That's just the physical universe. What about all the other parallel universes? What we call creation is alive with life. And yet, it's become a situation where you're ridiculed if you talk about extraterrestrial life over the years. You know, you get people saying, hey, he thinks there's other life in the universe more intelligent than me, you know. And you think, darling, I've seen a cup of coffee more intelligent than you. But the point being that to say that in this amazing mass of life, in this galaxy alone, that life as we know it has only evolved on this one tiny little planet in this one solar system, that's credible. Oh, yeah, scientists say that. And yet to say there must be life elsewhere on the law of averages alone is to be, oh, he's a bit strange. He believes in extraterrestrials. But when you look dispassionately at the evidence, and that's the point, if you come into this stuff with a belief to defend, might as well go and watch The Price is Right, because the belief will defend itself. If we let the information lead us rather than the preconceived idea, it takes us into some very interesting areas. First of all, when you look at ancient texts and traditions all over the world, literally all over the world, you find very clear descriptions of an advanced race or races that we would call extraterrestrial, not of this planet, that came to this planet and brought this advanced knowledge a long, long time ago. Some of the most famous examples of this are what have become known as the Sumerian texts or tablets. They were found in what we now call Iraq in the last century, about 1850, thousands of them. And they've been translated by a number of people, most famously a guy called Zachariah Sitchin. People think he's the only one that's done it because of the publicity and stuff that he's got in his books, but many other people have done it and have come to a slightly different interpretation than him. But the common theme of all of them is this, that a group which the Sumerian tablets, which were buried around 2000 BC, something like that, that they talk about this group they call the Anunnaki. In Sumerian, those who from heaven to earth came, which is the basic translation, but those who came from the high place and down to the earth overall is the feel of it, the Anunnaki. And when it talks about these Anunnaki and the tablets and stuff, and here's an example of just one of the so-called cylinder seals that were found among them, depicting various things. There are some remarkable points and areas of text and evidence that you can see. First of all, there is remarkable knowledge in these texts of planetary, solar system, universal, astronomical knowledge that has only been confirmed in this century and sometimes even more recently. In the text, for instance, they describe what Uranus and Neptune look like in a way that's only been confirmed in literally the last few years. They depict the solar system with planets that have only been found in the last century and the 20th century. How did they do that? What they say is the knowledge was brought by this Anunnaki. But it's more than that, because it talks in some detail about how this Anunnaki interbred with humanity, creating a hybrid race. And you find this theme all over the world. You find it in Genesis, in the Bible, which is a rewrite, when you do the research, of the Sumerian stories. So we get the theme of the sons of God who interbred with the daughters of men. But when you take that back to the Hebrew, just one step, you find that that phrase, sons of God interbred with the daughters of men, actually says sons of the gods interbred with the daughters of men. And every time in the Old Testament you see the word God, it's translated from a word meaning gods. And it's clear to me that we have been misled and we've misunderstood the difference between the gods, symbolically extraterrestrials in the ancient world, and God, which is all consciousness, all energy, everything that exists. So these Sumerian tablets very much confirm this ancient race. Now, again, when you look at other cultures, you find the same stories. In the ancient Hindu cultures, the Vedas, their ancient holy books, you find descriptions of the gods flying in flying machines, which we would call aeroplanes or UFOs or flying saucers, whatever. And when you take the common theme around the world, it's very clear that in the ancient world was a race or races of very, very high technological knowledge. And this was the knowledge that built the pyramids. This was the knowledge that built all those ancient structures which conventional history and archaeology simply cannot explain. Now, this area here of what we call the asteroid belt would seem to be very, very significant. If you take Zachariah Sitchin's translation of the Sumerian tablets, the detail of which I have a problem with, I must say, here and there, they talk about, according to his translation, that a planet called Nibiru, the planet of the crossing in his translation of the Sumerian, came into this solar system a vast, vast amount of time ago. And one of its moons collided with a planet that was between Jupiter and Mars, and that created the asteroid belt, which just happens to be between Jupiter and Mars. That's one interpretation of what happened, but there are others, and I've come across a scientist, a friend in America, who's been researching all this for 30 years, and he is convinced from a large amount of different evidence that actually something different happened, not least because at a major corporation he used to work for, they did a study, the physicists at that corporation, into what must have happened to the solar system. Because when you look at the planets and how they spin and how fast they spin and all this stuff, it's very clear that some major, major disruption has happened in this solar system. It's affected not just the Earth, but also the other planets. It's a major cataclysm. And they came to the conclusion, which basically supports the theme of a guy called Immanuel Velikovsky in the 50s, who was ridiculed for saying that what we now call Venus went through this solar system, devastated Mars, and almost destroyed the Earth. But these physicists are actually supporting the basis of that. What they believe, as a result of their research, is that the planet we now call Jupiter came into this solar system not that long ago, remarkably, 7,000 years ago maybe, something like that. 4,800 BC was the date that I was given for the window of time that had happened. And it collided with a planet that was in that area, and devastation unfolded and the asteroid belt was the result. They also suggested that a great chunk of Jupiter, which is a colossal planet, of course, broke off and careered through this solar system and devastated Mars. Interestingly, the probes to Mars have suggested that the landscape of Mars is no more than 10,000 years old. So something certainly happened there that devastated it. And came close enough to the Earth and was caught in the Earth's field for a while, did a couple of orbits. And that orbit, when you look at the scientific suggestion of what that would have caused, starts to confirm some incredible legends, traditions, and oral and written evidence from the ancient world all over the planet that there came what the Bible calls the Great Flood. One of the things that this would have done, this pass by what we now call Venus, is to have created a 10,000-foot tidal wave. Interestingly, in the pre-flood world, since then, agriculture as we know it began at heights above 10,000 feet. Quite obvious why that would have happened in the scenario we're talking about.